Back to New Hampshire Perspective with your host, Jeff Chittister.
Welcome back to New Hampshire Perspective. Jeff Chittister with you. Of course, we always thank you when you take time out of your Sunday morning to join us. Don't forget to check us out online at WGIRAM.com, 96.7thewave.com. You can also live stream the program right from those pages. And check out JeffChittister.com. At JeffChittister.com, you also get my daily blog as well as archives of all of our show. This week, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., I am sitting in on the WGIR morning show, so join me. We got some great guests planned for you. Later in the week, we're going to be talking to Newt Gingrich. We're going to be talking to Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. In the beginning of the week, we're going to be getting reaction to President Obama's Middle East speech from the Heritage Foundation, as well as talking to former New York Governor George Pataki. And in the middle of the week, we're going to be talking about Lyme disease and some other things. So that's all this week, Monday through Friday, from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the WGIR Morning Show on AM 610. And our next guest has written a fantastic book called Control Freaks, Seven Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. This person is no stranger to New Hampshire, Terrence Jeffrey. He was born in San Francisco, holds a bachelor's degree in English from Princeton University. He is the editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com, one of the sources we go to every day. Also editor-at-large at Human Events and columnist for Creators Syndicate. He is also the national campaign manager for Patrick Buchanan in his 1996 presidential campaign, which, of course, Pat won here in New Hampshire, the primary. So he, once again, you know, Mr. Jeffrey, thank you for joining us here on New Hampshire Perspective.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show.
So you are no stranger to New Hampshire. We should talk to you about New Hampshire politics a little bit. You probably know a lot about it. But the book is great. It really is. And there's a few things in the book that I wanted to talk to you about. Of course, you know, the book really talks about and has one very paramount question that you ask is who is in control. And I just want to read one quote from the book that struck me right when I started to read it. When we make the major decisions in our lives, we are free. When someone else makes them, we are not free. When government makes them, we live in tyranny. How close are we to that right now?
Well, we're getting there.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot closer. I think we're heading toward a point in our country where we're going to have to decide whether we're going to go all the way into socialism, where the government basically controls all the major decisions in our lives and controls the property in our country, or whether we're going to go back to the limited government principles of the founding fathers, and just as importantly, the moral principles that preceded those constitutional principles.
And once again, we're talking to Terrence Jeffrey, and his new book is called Control Freaks, Seven Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. So let's talk about a few things in the book. One of the things you bring up in the book, Terry, is this basic understanding of how government controls our lives every single day. And you talk about certainly how this administration and people within the Democrat Party have moved towards that. But we actually saw this pivot very early. You talk very clearly about how in the 30s under FDR, we started to see this pivot. So it's not something new.
No, it's not. In fact, that is the real, I think when you look at, you know, when you're asking the question about government controlling the lives of individuals and diminishing our liberty by making decisions for us, the 1930s is the real pivot point. Of course, you had the stock market crash in 1929, and you had the Great Depression, and there was this real economic crisis in the country. But when it really started to happen was after the Democrats won a sweeping victory in the 1936 elections.
Right.
Roosevelt had initially been elected in 1932. He was elected, he won all but two states, Vermont and Maine, believe it or not. In 1936, the Democrats increased their large majorities in Congress. They literally controlled Congress. There are very few Republicans in Congress after that election. And that's when, in the book, I talk about how immediately after the election, Roosevelt tried to pack the Supreme Court. And the reason he wanted to pack the Supreme Court was so that they could force through a lot of New Deal programs that everybody understood was unconstitutional. Even the authors of the programs thought they were unconstitutional. But they thought that if they could control the court or at least intimidate the court, they could change the basic nature of the relationship between individuals in American society and the federal government. And unfortunately, to some degree, they succeeded in doing that.
Yeah, and we see a lot of those legacy programs. And once again, we're talking to Terrence Jeffrey. He wrote the book Control Freaks, and we're going to make sure we post that information up online for you at New Hampshire Perspective, JeffChittister.com. And let's talk about some of the items that you bring out in the book so well. The first one is You talk about policies that we've seen over the past few years about restricting our movements, and you talk about this concept of urban growth boundaries. You also talk about how plans are being put in place to really start tracking us and taxing us for every kind of movement that we go through. And you've talked before about one of the model examples of how this has already started to happen is the city of Portland, Oregon. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, Ray LaHood, who is the Secretary of Transportation, is actually a former Republican congressman from Peoria, Illinois. But he's a big government guy, always was, and Obama named him Secretary of Transportation. And LaHood has started a couple of initiatives, one he calls his Sustainability Initiative, the other they call the Livability Initiative. And they're in partnership with other federal agencies, particularly the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the Environmental Protection Agency. And the aim of these programs, LaHood himself has said, is to try and replicate Portland around the nation. They want all communities around the country to have development plans like Portland has and the sort of regulations they have in Oregon. And well, what does that mean? Well, in the state of Oregon, they've passed very extensive environmental and development laws which require every community to or every metropolitan area to have what they call an urban growth boundary, which is literally a line they draw on the map around the city, and then they use regulation, taxing, and zoning to systematically prevent any kind of development outside that line, force all development inside the line, and in Oregon, they actually aim at having, under the regulations of the state, an average of 16 residential units per acre. And the reason they aim at 16 residential units per acre is that's how many you need to sustain a government-owned, government-operated, government-scheduled mass transit system. Because that's one of the ultimate goals of this kind of development, is to force everybody out of cars into government-run mass transit. They want everybody living within walking and biking distance. That's literally what the Oregon regulations say of the government mass transit system. When Ray LaHood last May was asked at the National Press Club whether or not this was a plan to, quote-unquote, coerce people out of their cars, he said it was a plan to coerce people out of their cars, and I think that's exactly what it is. They have this environmentalist vision where they want us all living in dense urban areas that are essentially walled off by regulation. We can't go out and live in a rural area. We can't even go out and live in an old-style suburb if they have their way. They want us all living along government mass transit lines in densely packed urban-style housing units.
Well, and it's fascinating, too, when you talk about this, just simple things like restricting, when you look at restricting our movement, reducing how many parking spaces they put into town. It's quite frightening because a lot of what we see within this administration is done through the czars. We do have a Department of Transportation that's doing some of this, but some of these actions will come through people that really don't have a checks and balance put in place. And it kind of goes into the next topic. You talk a little bit more about how they want to control our retirement, and certainly we know they want to control our health care. You talk about Social Security, and Social Security almost from the beginning has been a doomed program. And one of the things you talk about, Terrence, is that many of us feel that Social Security is unconstitutional, but we just can't get rid of it tomorrow.
Right. Well, we can't. I mean, let me just say at the outset that in my book I say, you know, we have Americans have spent their entire lives paying payroll taxes into Social Security and Medicare on the expectation that in their senior years they will get the benefits of Social Security and Medicare, and I don't think we can renege on this.
Right.
But in my book, I argue, I think I demonstrate, I think I more than argue, I just flat-out demonstrate that Social Security was unconstitutional. Medicare, which is based on the same premise as Social Security, was unconstitutional. I actually quote the authors of the Social Security Act, one of whom says the Council for the Committee on Economic Security, which was a committee that Franklin Roosevelt put together to write the Social Security Act, he admitted that he was glad he was never called into Congress to testify about it under oath because he thought the arguments against the constitutionality of it were persuasive. But and by the way, Obama's going to try and justify Obamacare on the same basis. But it was flatly unconstitutional. It was contrary to the American understanding of their relationship with government. Franklin Roosevelt, as I quote in my book, quite specifically envisioned Social Security as replacing the traditional family as the basic unit of cultural and social dependency. Historically, Americans took care of their own. When you're raising children, you were responsible for your own children. You paid for them. You looked after their health and welfare. when you got older, your children took care of you. Roosevelt saw that as a bad model. He wanted the state to replace the family as the institution that Americans were dependent on. And Social Security, he expressly saw as the first step towards doing that. And as I point out in my book, according to the Social Security Administration itself, we now have a majority of Americans over the age of 65 who are dependent on the federal government for a majority of their income through Social Security. That's how they get it. When you go back to 1939, which was the year before Social Security benefits started flowing, the only people who got income from the federal government were people who worked for the federal government or pensioned veterans. Everybody else took care of themselves.
Right.
Now we have a nation where seniors are dependent on the federal government for their income and for their health care, and where the people who want to expand the federal state want to use that dependency as a wedge to further expand government control over people's lives by making more of us at earlier ages dependent on the government for our health care and other necessities.
Well, that's the great thing about the book, too, Terry. Once again, Terrence Jeffrey, his new book is called Control Freaks, Seven Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. You don't just write about, you know, these things that you're starting to observe. You actually go in and find the quotes and find the plans and talk about them and give people a direct link as to the map that they're using to kind of enact some of these policies. One of the other frightening things that I was concerned about when we talk about their control over health care and certainly our retirement, you mentioned one of the things that people don't realize with the new Obamacare is that there is a tax of 3.8% tax on your savings and other items, too. It's just another way that they're creeping into our lives and making us be dependent.
Right. Well, this is a very insidious element of Obamacare. I'm so glad that the Republicans now say they want to repeal it. This was something that snuck in there. Almost no one noticed it. But what they did is they put a 3.8% tax on what Nancy Pelosi called unearned income, whatever that is.
Right.
But what it actually is, they put a 3.8% tax on dividends, interest, royalties, annuities, and rent, which when you step back and you look at it, basically that's income from savings. That's money where you didn't spend it and you put it into the stock market, or you bought a home that you rent out or another property that you rent out. It's savings. And that money theoretically is dedicated to paying for Medicare.
Right.
Now, well, they already tax us for Medicare on our income through the payroll tax. Now, why did they do this? What I explain in the book, using Treasury Department numbers, these are not my numbers, they're Treasury Department numbers that were put in very clear and analytical form by the Peterson Foundation, who I cite in the book. Thanks to this welfare state that they've built up, primarily through Social Security and Medicare, the government now faces a $61.9 trillion unfunded liability.
Absolutely.
Now what that $61.9 trillion is the national debt plus all the entitlement benefits that are promised to Americans who are now alive that cannot be met by the anticipated tax revenue that's going to come in under the current tax code. That equals $200,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States, all 307 million of us, so the government needs to go out and find an additional revenue. I submit one of the ways they're going to do it is by taking this 3.8% tax on savings that they put in Obamacare and increasing the rate of that tax and lowering the threshold of income that it's subject to, and use it as a way to raid the savings of people that were prudent enough in their life to actually save money rather than go into debt, and use the savings of provident, hardworking, middle-class Americans to try and keep their welfare state rolling a little bit longer than it otherwise would.
Well, I mean, it's absolutely frightening. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to take our first break. We're going to come back with our guest once again, Terrence Jeffrey. We're going to link him up on our webpage at jeffchittister.com. And his new book is called Control Freaks, Seven Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation on New Hampshire Perspective.
New Hampshire Perspective with Jeff Chittister.
And welcome back to New Hampshire Perspective. And, of course, we're going to continue our conversation with our guest, Terrence P. Jeffrey. He is the author of the new book, Control Freaks, Seven Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. And, you know, when we're talking, some of the topics that are in your book are absolutely fantastic. You talk about, movement, certainly. You talk about Social Security, and we talked about that, how they plan to really look at taking property. But one of the things I was interested in, Terry, was something that hasn't been talked about too much, certainly during this campaign season, and it's the control over our life and death. And you have a topic in here that really looks at how liberals hope to control life and death issues, and particularly abortion. And one quote just struck me, and I think you're going to know why this quote struck me. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights." Now, President Obama appeared at a conference last week, and "endowed by our creator" was left out. I mean, what do you think about when you see things like that?
Well, I think he does. I think in my book, I explain in detail why he doesn't. President Obama does not recognize that these rights are God-given, and he cannot recognize that they are God-given because he wants the state to take them away.
Right.
And two of the things I'm trying to do in my book is, one, show where all these liberal programs and agendas run afoul of constitutional principles, but I also try to show where they run afoul of the natural law moral principles that preceded the Constitution, and that all of the founding fathers, even the ones who weren't Christians, and some of them weren't, understood were immutable moral laws that the state must obey. And fundamental to those laws was the right to life. In that chapter of my book, I quote Cicero. Marcus Tullius Cicero is a Roman senator who lived in the century before Christ. All of the founding fathers were intimately familiar with his work. In fact, in order to get into an American college in those days, you had to be able to translate Cicero from Latin. And Cicero, who was a pre-Christian philosopher, said there is one God, that this God had issued a moral law that was immutable, it applied to all men and all nations at all times, and that no government could disobey it. The founding fathers knew that. They referenced it all the time. And what I argue in my book is, and in fact, I point out that Jefferson cited Cicero as one of the inspirations for the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
And that this was something that was part of the American mind, this understanding of law. Well, if you believe that the state can either authorize someone to take the life of an innocent, as they do in abortion, or that the state can actually pay for someone to take an innocent life, as President Obama will do with his initiative to fund embryonic killing stem cell research, you cannot believe that there is a God-given right to life for all human beings. Because you are, in fact, taking the God-given right to life of a human being in an abortion or in embryo-killing stem cell research. So you have to cavil with that. Now, in my book, I go through and I talk about some of the things President Obama specifically has said and done,
right,
and some of his allies in Congress, where they have avoided dealing with this question.
They have.
Because I believe Obama knows that he cannot reconcile his position on abortion and his position on embryo research and his position on some other things with the idea that there is a God that gives every single human being equally, regardless of our race, regardless of where we're born, regardless of what country we live in, and regardless of our age, a right to life that cannot be violated. He cannot recognize that because he's already deeply involved in advancing an agenda that violates that principle.
And, and once again, we're talking to Terrence Jeffrey. His new book is called Control Freaks, 7 Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. We're going to link up Terry's information up on our webpage so you can find out a little bit more about him. But, that one chapter alone, I would have to tell you, Terry, that you did that better than probably I've seen anyone else try to do it. The way that you brought in some of the quotes, you also talk about that Berlin Wall type of understanding of when we define life and what happens when we decide to try to do that. It was every chapter was great, but I found that one, especially conservatives who are trying to reconcile their understanding of why abortion is still a very important issue, that makes the book worth certainly the price you pay. But it goes into the next part too, Terry. We talk about Kagan, and Kagan really comes to mind on three ways. She's now on the Supreme Court, but her respect for life is what had a lot of people very concerned when she was being nominated.
Right. Well, I think Kagan is in the same camp with Obama. I've never seen her talk about God-given rights or the natural law,
right,
moral premises that precede the Constitution. I've read through a lot of her legal writings. I've never seen her do it, even though she discusses issues that are very central to this, including speech and life. And she didn't do it in her hearings. And we know from the memos that have been released by the Clinton Presidential Library that when she was an advisor in the Clinton White House, she was probably the key person that was maneuvering and trying to present an argument and a political plausible position that Clinton could take to veto the partial birth abortion ban and keep partial birth abortion legal in the United States. You know, when you mention that, I talk in the book about what I call the Berlin Wall
right.
of life. And what I meant by that is this. You know, when Ronald Reagan talked about the Cold War, he very clearly said the Soviet Union, this is a battle against an atheistic political force that does not recognize God and his law. And that's the way Reagan conceptualized the Cold War. And he's absolutely right. On the other side of the Berlin Wall, you had political leaders and a political system that was atheistic and didn't recognize that natural law that from Cicero on we've recognized in our civilization. What liberals like Kagan and Obama do, who don't want to say that everybody is denied these rights, and don't want to flat out say they're atheists and they deny that there are God-given rights, is they essentially have to put up a Berlin Wall somewhere in life.
Right.
They have to say somewhere along the way in life, from the moment of your conception before your death, somewhere in there, they're erecting a wall where they're saying, on one side of that wall, you don't have these God-given rights. On the other side, you do. And it's totally artificial and fake. And as I point out in my book, Obama can't exactly explain where his wall is. And I believe he can't explain where it is because he wants to leave open the option of moving it. Because he doesn't know when in the future he may want to deny you or me or one of our relatives or friends a God-given right. So he doesn't want to be on the record as actually claiming or stating clearly and unambiguously that we all have those rights, which is why last week, he took the creator out of the Declaration of Independence.
And when that was frightening, too, and I think we've come time near the end of our interview, and once again, we've been talking to Terrence Jeffrey. He is the author of the new book called Control Freak, 7 Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. We're going to link that information up. He is also the editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. That's CNSNews.com. We get a lot of our news stories from there, so we encourage you to go over there and visit them. Are you going to come back to New Hampshire anytime and start fisticuffs into our campaigns that we're getting ready for? in 2012.
Well, I'd like to, I don't know that I'll get up there before November, but I'd like to, be involved in reporting as a journalist what goes on, of course, when the new presidential campaign starts. And New Hampshire is a great state.
It is.
I love New Hampshire. I've spent a lot of time up there. I did two presidential campaigns in 92 and 96 where I spent a lot of time traveling around New Hampshire, and it's a great place.
Yeah, many of us remember you, so it would be nice to see you back up here. And once again, we have been talking to Terrence Jeffrey, Control Freak, 7 Ways Liberals Plan to Ruin Your Life. You will be absolutely horrified when you find out some of the things that are currently going on. Some we know, but many we don't. So pick up the book when you get a chance. And once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us this week on New Hampshire Perspective.